Right.
Hello.
Oh, we're going to be on the wrong sides because I put it on the wrong side of the other side of the table. Normally it's that end.
Ah.
So we might be in the wrong ears. Right. Hello guys.
Hi.
We're back. It's been an incredibly long break. Longer than we intended it to be. We did record a podcast last week and it sounded like a badly tuned radio, like it was just horrible static through the whole thing, which I think means the microphone wasn't plugged in properly. But we're going to have another go, which hopefully means we'll be no less coherent about what we were talking about. So we wanted to talk about rhythm, routine and structure. I think rhythm and routine and structure are an interesting thing at Forest School because they're quite often the first thing people, if you've gone to a Forest School session, it's normally the first thing people pick up on. It's like, oh, it's not as structured as school, or it's not as structured as a normal, in air quotes, normal toddler session. It's not as structured as whatever. And I think there's a difference, we were talking about the difference between structure and rhythm, and there is definitely a rhythm to our sessions, but that it's quite a rhythm I feel like is more fluid as a term. It kind of implies that like it lasts as long as it lasts, whereas structure sounds like it's imposed.
Yep.
Maybe that's what I think the difference is.
Yeah, definitely, and that we have the freedom, I guess, to read a session each time. Each group is different, and each, you know, you might do the same activity, even with the same group of children, but on a different day and in another environment or in a different type of setting, you might go, oh, we've got 20 minutes for this and that's what we're going to spend on it. Whereas we have the flexibility to be able to go, do you know what, this just isn't working, or it's taken 5 seconds and that's absolutely fine. And now let's look at what the children are doing, which can lead us to our next sort of activity or, you know, thing that we're going to do, our next play type or whatever. Which is great that we have the freedom to be able to do that. And then and the other way around, you know, you might have brought your sort of bag of ideas, which you've written on the blackboard and go, okay, we're going to, you know, I think we might do this today, but because a child has...
Well, they arrive, you know, it's that thing of meeting them where they are, isn't it?
Completely.
And not going, especially, I think it's very different. If you had a group of children that you were meeting every day, I think we've said this before about planning, is I think you can more consistently be like, you were like this at 3 o'clock on Monday. I've got a reasonable idea that you might remember that idea and still be interested in it Tuesday morning.
Yeah.
But because a lot of our, well, almost all of our groups are weekly.
But do you know what? I was actually thinking about that and I wonder whether that's true. Even if we saw the same group of children every day here in the woods, I think it might be more different because the woods is such a changing environment. Because you're outdoors and because the you know, the weather, the amount of light, the amount of wind, you know, things that not just seasonal change, but like moment to moment change, day by day change about climate, about, you know, what the fact that the environment is constantly stimulating. They found a beetle today. That beetle wasn't there yesterday, you know, or there's a bird that's come closer. And so all of those things completely influence, especially, I think, with little children who do notice those things and are very almost elemental more than adults, because they don't have that whole like whirling, oh, I'm thinking about the fact that my dishwasher is broken or whatever. They're in the moment, aren't they? So even if they were at that place at 3 o'clock yesterday and you knew you're going to see those same children in the same place, I just think you can't know.
I read a really interesting thing in the Coyote Guide book, and they were talking about the different perspective on things. And the example, the sort of metaphor they used was like a man that's taken his little boy for a hike, and he said they'd gone up to this hike, and he said he was looking at the top of this, at this enormous view, which in the scheme of things is relatively unchanging. You could go up almost every day, and that view is unchanging.
Yeah.
But his toddler was at the same place with the view, but his toddler was looking at a worm on the ground.
Yeah.
And that will change all the time, and I wonder if that's that... If you extrapolated that out as adults, we're looking at the big unchanging picture because we go, you know, oh, Christmas is coming and always next year. Yeah. We're looking at things in such a big frame.
Macro.
Macro. And that we almost rely on a structure to run things on autopilot.
Yeah.
Whereas because children can look at the minutiae and can, it's almost mindfulness, isn't there? More present in what is actually happening,
yeah,
as opposed to an adult that is going,
yeah,
right, I know this, you know, we just put the breakfast on the table, then we go by 8:10.
Yeah.
Whereas a kid is going, oh, the Rice Krispies have gone softer this morning and all that stuff. And
but also makes it more, if you're talking about kind of structure of a session, also makes it sometimes potentially more difficult if you've decided that at this time we're all going to cook.
Mm.
But some children are completely immersed in that minute world, and you know, they've got, you know, like that diagram that was doing the rounds on the internet for a bit.
Oh, the tendrils.
The tendrils.
Yeah.
And so an adult comes along and goes, come on now, you love cooking, we're cooking now. Come on, leave that now, we're cooking, wash hands, let's go. And you do it with the best of intentions, or, you know, an adult will do it with the best of intentions because they do know that the kid loves cooking. They've shown that they love cooking beforehand, and they know that at the end they'll enjoy eating the food and it'll be a great experience all round. But the process of ripping those tendrils of thought and engagement and involvement out, you know, can be almost painful for the child. So that's a very delicate balance to strike, isn't it? And something I think we work hard to explain to parents who are here, because the parents do want to get like the best out of the session. They want to take part in all the activities that are on offer, but sometimes
it's a bit of FOMO, isn't it? Fear of missing out, of just kind of, oh, we've got to do that because then they might not do I don't know, this type of cooking again. And actually it's kind of like, well, we might if this is what you're into, and then
it's about appreciating the benefit for the child of what they're doing as well, because to you it might not look like very much, but to them it might be a massive moment for them.
You know,
it's an important, they've chosen it, and you know, who are we really to come tramping all over that and go, but this is the structure, this is the timetable, we're doing this.
Do you think there's ever a sliding, so I don't think anyone would disagree that for some children with additional needs, structure and kind of routines can be very important, and they to feel comfortable and access Forest School in the best way, they do need some routines, or they feel more comfortable with routines. Do you think I wonder if there's something that's like for all children, so I say we have some children that come and start in toddler groups, and I go, or even the Saturday morning groups, I'm like, actually you need quite a lot of, not structure, but you need quite a lot of input at the moment. You need me to go, oh, should we try in this game? Do you want to go over here? Have you seen this?
Yep.
They need more of that adult input, which can feel like structure. And then you almost need that. It's almost like an extended tour, so that you're almost going, did you know this was here? Did you know this was here? Did you know this was happening? So that next week you go, well, do you remember all those things are still here? Is there anything you want to... Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
You're almost reducing the amount of... I was going to say structure, but it's not structure, is it? It's input.
Yeah.
And whether you... And actually, I think what's interesting is where we as practitioners, as children get older, I think they become more... If they practiced at it, they become more aware at telling you when their rhythm has come to an end and they've finished an activity. With younger children, I think
you have to read it
definitely. And go, you might not think that you're, you know, it's like, I can see you're coming to the end of this, and I need to have something, well, not I need to, I wonder if you would need something else.
Yeah.
Coming in almost underneath that to overlap and...
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's quite interesting.
We were talking the other day, weren't we, about the play cycle and about... sort of letting it run its course and being in that state of negative capability, so that you are completely receptive without your own agenda, without bringing your own...
Do you want to explain negative capability as your new thing?
So negative capability is a phrase coined by the poet John Keats, and he explained it as the state in which you can where true poetry and creativity can happen, because you are completely open and in the moment, and you haven't got any preconceptions about what you want from a situation or from a thought. You are completely open. And so play workers often use this as well to describe a state that the ideal adult will be in when playing with a child, so that instead of going, oh, I can see you're writing on the ground with a stick, let's try and do some letters with this and whatnot. So you might have an impulse to, you know, they call it adulterate the play with your own agenda.
Which is
you've got your own kind of like goal for that child, or you start adding in things for the best of intentions. But actually, if you just wait and see and let the child lead, then the play cycle can naturally come to its own you know, end and fruition and like you're describing, move on to the next thing. So you're watchful for the play cues and you're there to support and to join in when the child gives you those play cues. But to try not to adulterate the situation, that's really hard.
And it's kind of interesting because I think you are, my experience of teaching was that you're encouraged to do that. You're encouraged to constantly kind of step in and, you know, in the teaching world, they refer to it as like extending or pushing them on and doing whatever. But actually, if I was thinking about... you know, the very basic lesson plan of like starter, main, and then you're, they used to call it a plenary, where you wrap everything up. And actually, thinking back at it, letting a play cycle come to an end is where the child is naturally going. I'm going to wrap this up now in my head. I've finished all of this up. And it's weirdly then, if you think about it, artificial to go, all 30 of you must now intellectually be at a point where I can condense all this information. Because someone there might have like, just started to get our grips to with the concept, but because someone over here, or because five people over here have come to the end of their cycle and you're reading the room and you're going, I'm really sorry, I'm going to pull you early and I'm pulling you late, and it doesn't fit. But then I think, so should we kind of talk about some of the routines that we do have in our sessions? So we have, what do? We start with a circle, which I think is pretty typical of any forest school, to try to at least try and sit round in a circle. And I learnt it as a thrive technique, because it equalises everybody in the in the circle. You can all see each other, but also it's like, this is your time to speak. And actually it's quite interesting, I think, when you get children in who, once they get comfortable with that routine and know that they're going to get, everybody's going to be on you. And you might be going around the circle, and we do arbitrary things like, what's your favourite cake? Or like, you know, who did you want to be when you grew up, kind of thing. We'll get round, and you get to a kid, and but they know that that's their time if they want to make something, and they'll just go off on one. Actually, I really like slugs. And you know what? This morning, my cat was licking my face, and, and it's just that feeling of, they know that routine enough to know, like, this is my time, I can talk to everybody, and they will listen. And I've got...
But also, if they don't want to, they don't have to, and that's fine. No pressure. But because that is a routine, and we always do it, then you see the progress of some children who aren't able to speak at the, you know,
who aren't able to sit with the circle for a really long time,
and then they decide that they're going to speak, and they know, and so all the time that's at the back of their brain going, well, I know it's going to be next week, so it doesn't really matter if I don't speak now, because I know it's going to happen next time, and I know it's going to happen next time, and maybe I'll feel ready. Oh, I do feel ready, and I'm going to share. And that moment of actually a child has spoken to the group for the first time is really special. But that wouldn't be there if it was, if we didn't always do it. And I always used to think that in school about assemblies as well. Like, obviously, if you're working in school, sometimes assemblies are not the greatest experience. Sometimes they can be a really powerful force. And I think within a school which does do assemblies well, if to do that, you know, without fail, like, we always all meet together on a Tuesday, no matter what. And if there are exams happening, we still meet, but in a different place. Instead of going, oh, assembly's cancelled again, assembly's cancelled again.
Are we going to do it in the morning today?
You know, and that it gives it value and meaning. And, you know, some things only work if you stick to them. And that is a routine, I think, that is important. Sorry, I meant to say that noise wasn't me doing a wee. It was actually me pouring some coffee. You probably heard a little sloshy, sloshy noise there, just in case.
Do you think people thought we were recording this while you were in the toilet?
Yeah, or some other kind of strange liquid pouring noise. I'm just aware that that might be in people's ears and sound quite weird. And then we have the blackboard, don't we? So we have some activities written up there, and sometimes we don't get to them all, you know, because play has happened and taken us off in a different direction, so we don't get to highlighted with birch bark, which was one of our activities this week.
I think that's
it?
One of the differences between having a lesson plan, like, because I always sort of think of the blackboard as our plan.
Yeah.
But it being a blackboard as opposed to a piece of paper means it's very low effort to completely scrub something out and write something else in its place, as opposed to a piece of paper where you've got to cross and jimmy stuff in or like. You know, lesson plans when you're a teacher, and you go, I've seen some teachers plan down to like, this will take 3 minutes, this will take five, and if you have to adjust it, and then they just lose it completely.
Palimpsest.
What's that?
A palimpsest is a tablet or somewhere where you write, which you can easily rub away, but it's always got the trace of what was written before. So like a wax tablet.
Whoa.
Yeah. So the blackboard is a palimpsest. So you can see the traces of ideas that have happened, because we never really properly clean it.
No,
it's always just kind of there, and the kids are able to work. That's the nice thing about it as it isn't like...
It's at child height, accessible.
Yeah, it's not like interactive whiteboard, teacher domain only. Yeah, yeah. Occasionally you might get invited to write on it if you're really special, but... yeah, it's there. And we say regularly, don't we? Like, the chalk's there. If you want to do that, write it on the board so we don't forget.
Or draw
we
it.
We can do it later.
That's the big
draw
thing, isn't it? Making it accessible. Do you want to just draw a thing? Yeah. Do you want to just, like, make a mark that you...
That will remind us that you want to do that later. Especially if, like, a kid wants to do something with tools and you go, oh, we can't do that right now because we've got these tools out. Yeah. But to show
put it on the board,
you this has value.
I am committed to it. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
All those things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there's a really interesting rhythm to the day. So we have... Our kindergarten runs all day. I mean all day, 9-3.
Yeah.
And the home ed groups run 9-3. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, I think, to see a whole day's worth of rhythms over. Because I think we talked last time we tried to record the podcast, didn't we, about almost concentric circles. So you have a play cycle might be the inner circle of however long that takes. And that a bit like I'm thinking of, like you might draw the planets.
Yeah.
You know, going around. And the small one would be the... That play cycle, and then the bigger one might be like a morning, and then morning, afternoon, that kind of cycle, and then the bigger one would be a whole day, and then and then like we've said, because the environment's always changing, you get that circle of like, well, a week goes past, and then you go, well, a season goes, you know, because I think in seasonally it's quite interesting because you start to notice change, and then you a bit like so with leaves turning, you notice the first bit of it. And then you don't notice the rest of them going because they're not interesting, because they're not novel.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, you do notice it, but it's not as...
Yeah.
We don't point it out to each other.
Yeah.
So we have this middle bit of a season where we perhaps aren't as aware as we could be.
Yeah.
And then towards the end of the season, you start to notice the next one coming in.
Mm.
You know, it might be... So if it's winter, it might be like, oh, there was a bit of frost this morning. And you start to notice those little bits. And that's actually quite an interesting circle because it doesn't... Whereas we're saying a play cycle, you let it completely come to an end.
Mm.
The seasons don't completely come to an end. They go, oh, it's very wintry today. And then the next week is Britain, so it's a heat wave. And, you know, and then the following week it's 4 foot of snow. And
I'm really interested in the way that the seasons affect our rhythms and therefore the rhythm of a session and the feeling
like
of a
group.
Like
we said about stories.
Yeah. So I read somewhere that...
Robin, come and sit with us.
Wants to join in. I read somewhere that in summer we are generally less able to focus. So we've got kind of energy, but it's all sort of diffuse and scatterbrained, and you know, we might feel kind of relaxed, but also we're a bit flighty and not really
a bit hazy.
Yeah, hazy, not really able to kind of sit down and read, or and all of our energy is outwards, so you're kind of like noticing, absorbing a lot of external stimulus, whereas in the winter your sort of circle of concentration gets like a bit smaller and more introvert, and you're more able to sit and read or craft or you know, give your energy and focus to one thing a bit longer. And I definitely think that's definitely true for me, and I think that does have a big effect on the way our groups work. So I do notice that in summer, if we're talking about our planning or reflecting on a session, I think summer groups often need a lot less input from us. I don't know if you feel the same, but the children have been there for, generally we have a lot of children that have been there for almost a year by that point, so that could also
I would agree. I think in the summer you almost need a bigger bag of smaller ideas. You need to, that thing that you build up over years of doing it, where you go, I know where we can go with this, and I know where we can go with that. Whereas in the winter you can much more go, should we carve some spoons, and people are more in a rhythm to sit and stay for a while. And in the summer I think they need less to get going on an idea, but they possibly need, like you're saying, where you're hazy and you drift from idea to idea. It's quite interesting, actually. We were saying, storytelling is something that in the summer doesn't really...
It doesn't work. Well, it's so weird, isn't it?
It's an interesting thing, because I think when we, mid-session, go to, you know, we get to sort of two-thirds of the way through, and you and I will find each other wherever we are and go, story or singing or how are we finishing? And... I think storytelling is as much about how we feel.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Because because we're sort of feeding off the vibe of the group.
Yeah.
So quite often in the summer, we just go, No, I'm not feeling a story. No. He's doing that, and yeah. she's going to be over there, yeah. and it's not going to work. Whereas in the winter, it's quite an... It seems to just be like, do you want to tell a story?
Yeah,
I do kind of want to get everybody yeah. back round and be yeah. a bit communal again. And
but it's almost like people sort of gather preemptively, even if you haven't said mm. there's going to be a story. There seems to be a natural moment in the winter sessions where you look around and everyone is sort of sat down yeah. around the fire, all having a snack or a drink at the same time, which doesn't happen so much in the summer. It's a lot more, no. you know, you have half the group up the hill and half the group down the hill and that kind of thing. So I think it's naturally, yeah, the rhythm of the group naturally facilitates storytelling better in the winter. Mm. Yeah,
it's kind of interesting. Mm. Well, I think that's a rhythm. Yeah. That's a rhythm ending. I don't know how long that was.
The play cycle has ended.
Our talk cycle has ended. Fantastic. Right. Cool. Thank you very much, guys. If you want to, we are running our next Adult Learning CPD Day is November 3rd, I think, off the top of my head, which we're focusing the whole day on play working. And invitations to play and the different play types and how you can facilitate those. So that would be brilliant. If you want to, drop us a message on Facebook with any questions or our email, which is childrenoftheforest@outlook.com. If not, we will see you hopefully next week yeah. on the podcast.
Yeah. Fantastic. Bye! Bye.